Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Business news, views, and insights from across the globe.
Welcome everyone to Hidden Growth Champions, our podcast series. Today in our virtual studio, I've got a very special guest, Ayman Asaf. Ayman, thank you for making time for this conversation. I know we've had a number of conversations over the last couple of months, both speaking about your illustrious career as a CIO, as a technology leader within very large corporates, about your very interesting work around innovation and how we apply technology, and as well as your work and your passion for inclusivity, for gender equality. And this is an area where both of us have become ambassadors for a very innovative and interesting organization. So I know we've touched base on a few fronts, but I just want to say thank you and welcome to our podcast. And perhaps for our audiences, please introduce yourself.
Thank you very much, Sar, for the introduction and for the opportunity to talk in the podcast. So my name is Ayman Asaf. I've been working in technology and primarily in investment banking and trading, perhaps all my career. I started as a software engineer, went through the, I would say, traditional progression from software engineering to analytics to management. My last role as a CIO for a large portion of the energy trading. I also been involved heavily in the last few years, I would say maybe the last 6-7 years, in innovation. I think people might see this cliche, but it is relevant, especially in the current, I would say, digital disruption in our time. Recently, I've been working as a freelancer, by working in startups and working in a lot of consulting with startups and transformation agendas for primarily small companies and some large ones as well.
Ayman, in your various roles, one of the things that you've noticed, and it's something we've noticed in our work as well, is how corporate strategies, and certainly as we turn from the kind of latter part of 2021 and into 2022, have changed in a very important respect, and that is around ambition. While I think many industries have been quite challenged in how we respond in a very practical, real, on-the-ground way to the pandemic, something has shifted through the latter part of 2021 and certainly now in 2022. And that is where, at a corporate level, CEOs and other senior executives are challenging their own assumptions around the strategy, are challenging their own pace of progress, whether it's around digital transformation or other aspects of their strategy. And essentially, the message they've been sharing with us is, we can do more. We can accelerate further. And this is the right time to do this. So perhaps share with us a little bit more about your conversations and what you've noticed is taking place.
I'm going to give a long, it's like a long answer maybe, but the way I would start, I mean, the term, I use it myself, digital transformation. Everywhere you look, the people talk about digital and innovation almost as synonymous. Technically, you could say anyone been working in IT, you know, including myself, that we've been working digital transformation forever. Since computers were invented, we've been in a digital transformation journey. Everything is moving from manual to automation, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, technically anyone work calls themselves digital transformation in one part or another. But what's different is, and it's really unique about it, is the pace of change. So before, you used to always sit down, watch sometimes your competitors, what they're doing, companies, et cetera. They already established products. You sort of make comparison. You're almost, you know, you're sitting there, you're cherry picking which one you think suits you. You've already built a strategy and you just try to find a solution can fit your strategy. But what's happening now is that pace of change in technology is phenomenal. You know, I have never seen this pace, and not only just the pace, but the type of technologies that all converging together. You see things happening in particular area, you know, maybe networking was over a period of time and people start to take advantage of that. Maybe the pace of like the processing power is so much, you know, AI, machine learning, you know, I know quantum computing, people might think it's early, but it's not early. I think it's relevant. We're talking about blockchain, data analytics. All of those started to create a huge opportunity. Another thing that's been happening in the background, brewing in the background for a very long time, but now becomes relevant, is the globalization nature of our world. So before, you know, if you're like an innovation or you're sort of almost constrained with your local environment, now you have access to resources anywhere from South Africa, from the Far East, from Russia, from wherever. So you get access to anything you need, which makes it easily accessible as well as cheaper to do that. And you're like fast off the block. 2021 added another factor to that, which is the coronavirus and also the sustainability. It started to drive people to think different. Governments making commitments to be zero carbon by particular years. So that's changed the way corporates to think about it. What does that mean? You can't anymore just sit with a vision and strategy and say, that's how I'm gonna do it. You know, let's find the systems. It used to be, this is what I want. This is my vision, go find it. What I know it's a cliche, but when people say the biggest hoteler in the world is Airbnb and they don't own a single room, the biggest car company is Uber and they don't have a single car, I think it's a real when you say, you know, for example, I coming from background energy, you know, the biggest energy company of the future doesn't necessarily have to have assets, you know, like fields, oil fields, or you know, just general physical assets. So that's changing. And that created opportunity for a lot of startups to start to come in very quickly, very nimble, build some products that actually start to eat up at some of those well-established companies because they can do it very fast. So now because of that pace of change, and it used to be the IT within a company, they're always ahead of the business in a way. You just call them the functional businesses. At the moment, no one really is up to date. You know, you got IT people that focus, and the CIOs. I was one of those CIOs. Your focus still operations to get the operations running, you know, helping the business and other functions of the business still to make money. So no one has got time almost to switch off what they do. They try to focus on where we want to be. And I think this is what's driven this corporate strategy to be a bit bolder ambition. And this is where the shift, it's really to be successful, it's something will have to come from the top down. It's see what's happening out there. And in a way, they don't get understand it sometimes. And you know, it's not because of the lack of experience. It's just too much happening out there. And their IT or their functions, they're still catching up with this. So this is where it is becoming challenging. And that's where they started to look at what's happening out there and started to make those bolder ambitions. And I think this is the way to go. You know, we've been for years doing the waterfalls. It's almost, we know we've got the target we're going towards and the strategy, the roadmap. And now you can't do that. You almost have to put a bold strategy and figure out how to get there. And that is what's different. I know I said I'm going to give a long answer. Perhaps this is a bit too long, but I think we'll cover some aspects of this in perhaps later on in the conversation. But to me, this is a very key to this change in corporate strategies.
Amen. I'm curious, and I'm asking this because recently we had another technology thought leader on our podcast, Jacqueline Teo. She's based in Hong Kong and she works a lot in the telecommunications sector. And she said something really, really interesting, which resonated and which we've seen in our work, which is the role of the leader in instigating this kind of conversation, where suddenly we don't just speak about the business as usual, our progress in terms of the current improvement program, etc. But there's a real challenge, and how she phrased it was the leader led through questions or with questions. Suddenly the questions that were posed were different, and it started to create a different dynamic in the executive team so that everyone could recognize the changing ambition, that everyone could recognize the possibility of creating something that's bigger and test the timing for it. So I'm just curious, from your work with leaders and executive teams, what have you seen as that dynamic? How did that open, frank, sometimes brutally honest discussion around it's time to shift our ambition, it's time to, whether it's clarifying it, whether it's accelerating it, whether it's saying it needs to be different, how does that happen?
So it is, it's absolutely true. I agree with what you just said. It's the biggest challenge this time is the whole mindset, and it is the shift in the mindset. It's sometimes because of, again, potentially related to the pace, related to the complexity and enormity of the change, it's hard to have a consistent view by all leaders of what the future is going to look like. The way I've worked with people, and I would categorize them into three categories. Some see what's happening, they get it, and they're like, already bought into it. They just want to be there. They want to explore. They want to find the way to get better and be part of the future. Some don't get it. And I think they just, you know, they just, they're not interested. They don't get it. They just perhaps they just wanted a faster computer, better, flashier spreadsheets or whatever it is they were using. But then there is the middle category, which is, I think, is the most challenging one, is the ones they sort of don't get it, but they sort of pretend or they imply that, yes, absolutely, that's the way we go, etc., because they hear outsiders talk about it, they hear maybe their bosses talk about it, and that makes it challenging. So this is where the challenge comes in. And then you look into, this is just the leaders, if you go within the leadership, their own teams, etc., you've got the same complexity of the mindset. And this is why it has to be something that's been really provoked from the top in terms of trying to change that mindset. And the priority would be, and this is, you know, part of the work I did, it started to set up what I call innovation labs, etc. And sometimes it's not about, and not sometimes, most of the time, it was not about just immediately try to generate ideas and business ideas, etc. It's about getting people to feel, to actually know what we were talking about. You know, what does AI mean to you? Because you've got a technology, just using as an example, you don't know what to do with it. And the only way to do that is to start experimenting with it and trying to put ideas, pulling people together. So, and it is difficult sometimes if some of those leaders actually are not bought into it. They focus, like I said earlier, it will be, let's get the, you know, making sure the operation, customer relationship is going well, systems are up and running, etc. And that makes a challenge.
I think it's been very valuable. I guess a related dimension to this, Amy, you've played both roles. You've both played the top leader role as well as the CIO role in a bigger organization. And I'm just kind of curious, when you look at this challenge where we don't necessarily all agree on when to shift gears or to what degree to shift gears, and to your earlier point, none of us have the answer. Here's the perfect technology for this, just use it, right? We create this space, we call it a liminal space, where no one has the exact answers yet, but we are willing to create. And sometimes we create it in partnership with others, sometimes we create it within our organization. And maybe talk to us a little bit about the kind of responses when that gap opens up, when suddenly people realize, okay, I don't have the answer, you don't have the answer. Actually, perhaps no one in our executive team has the answer for us. I can't just give them the accountability for it and they'll just run with it. We need to create something different here. And what are some of the arrangements or the responses that an organization can consider when they recognize that they're in that space?
So you can't operate the way you are operating. You know, traditionally you evolve into something different, and that takes time, and you've got your teams, your organization structure. And the way I've seen it, and I've seen it work really well, is you don't change that to some aspect. So almost you leave that contained and just keep the bloodline flowing there. But what you need to do is, almost everyone should be, you know, especially if you're a big company, you almost have to start your own startup within your own company. What that means is you need to, no one knows the answer. The actual, it used to be, here's my IT guys, can we do something? Especially when it comes into technology, let's say, go find me a solution. But now you don't do that because you don't know what the solution is going to look like. And I know maybe I'm talking about technology as aspect. It's not necessarily about technology. Sometimes it's really about the innovation using, you know, business model, or it's not just about a product as well. So it's partnership. It's absolutely key to essential to this. You know, the suppliers, the vendors and technology providers, some of them have technologies, but they don't know what to do with it because there is no business model. And the most successful way is being able to protect this, what I call it, a startup or whichever you want to describe it. Give it the right resources. Don't set expectation of, I'm putting a dollar here, I'm expecting $2 back, etc. It's about trying and learning and also exploring. And part of this is to bring the right capabilities. It has to be people from different functions. You know, I use the term technologists, the business side, but also the technology partners, as well as the consultants, the experts from the outside, who can come in together and based on their actions, this is where you miss that. interactions of other companies and what others are doing, that's what could enrich the whole experience and make it thrive and also progress at a quicker pace. And this is, I cannot underline how important this is. Because if you're going to go to your team and say, hey, let's go experience center, it's not going to work because they still have their day job. They still have their priorities and they still have those expectations. You need somebody to come in and have their primary objective is to invent or create the future. And that cannot happen in just a traditional way. It's being able to build something tight and let that grow. So it's being able to, just like this very fresh startup, you don't have all the constraints that a big corporate or, you know, medium corporate have already in the structure. Being able to get things literally at a very fast pace, and have a very light process to get things done. And that doesn't work without having the partnership and the experience from within the company, some, and within the outside world. And that includes software providers or consultancies where they've worked with other companies in a similar type of fashion. And yes, being able to do, and that was setting the process took a little bit long, but once the process was set up, it literally from an idea coming in to someone submit an idea to get it through what I have called like an angels to be able to see the validate the ideas and score them and put them through or reject them, to actually the idea with the third parties, or because we didn't even have the capabilities at the time. You need to rely in some aspects, especially some of the technology is that you need for some of those ideas. Being able to start the development and deliver something within 8 weeks. It took literally from an idea to minimal viable product. It was phenomenal. And that played a significant part in the bit I mentioned earlier around the mindset shift. Part of it is to publicize some of this work and some of those ideas and engage a lot of people to come in. And it's almost like a snowballing. It just starts to grow and people start to see and created competition. Everyone started to want to be part of this. Everyone wanted to bring in more ideas. And I had some phenomenal, you know, some of this, what I've seen, some really incredible ideas in terms of potential value and delivering value in the long term. It's phenomenal amounts of dollars as well.
Ayman, one party that I think we've been alluding to, but maybe not mentioning by name in that 8-week process is customers. One of the things that I've been most fascinated about accelerating the development process and through rapid prototyping and similar innovation techniques has been how forthright, open, and willing customers have been and how their insights could really shift what the solution ultimately becomes very quickly. So within weeks, we're sitting with, we now know this is validated. We now know this is what clients would really appreciate. We have a much better understanding of the business model and how to commercialize it, not just from our own ideas, but really what our clients are sharing with us. And I guess similarly, we've seen this with partners. I always say to clients, never underestimate the degree to which partners are willing to partner with you. Never underestimate the degree to which they're willing to share their capabilities with you. If there's a compelling case for it, if their vision is inclusive and broadened enough, a lot could really happen. So just wondering, what are some of the experience you've seen in your world?
Thank you for that reminder. Absolutely. Everything, it's a shift, part of the shift in the mindset and part of the shift in strategy and vision. Everything is customer oriented. I know Amazon said it before, which is customer obsession. And it is that finally companies get what Amazon has been saying and doing. Customer is the key to all of this. It's being part of this process. Because at the end of the day, you're delivering a product, whatever it is, or a service to your customer. And no one knows better than what the customer wants, more than the customer themselves. So yeah, it's absolutely essential and part of it. And actually organizations, one of the changes a lot of companies started to do now is to reorganize based on the customer. Because if you're, and we didn't talk about organization restructure, again, we can cover this in a minute, but instead of having, be looking at organization in a horizontal way, it becomes a vertical. Who is your customer? And all of your services as a company should be working together to service that customer, rather than everyone working vertically in terms of that's the service I provide, and that's what's, and then they're going sometimes competing and talking to the same customers or dealing with the same customers. Why not provide an end-to-end service to the same customer through one organization? And that is a key to the future type of operating models. So I mentioned about organizations. My personal belief, and I have seen it happen in a number of organizations, it's too hard because of the pace of change. And you know, not everyone is still up there understanding and knowing what is really going to, you know, how things are going to pan out, and, you know, how are we going to transform. An organization will be needed to try to get the right setup of the company structure, but also getting the right people with the right mindset. Because, you know, previously, you know, I came from a big corporate, and they always have leadership training, staff training, etc. You know what's, how the world is shifting, and you know what that world is looking, and you always put your executives or your top leaders or, you know, or most of your leaders into training, and you sort of over time they get it and they come back roaring to go. You don't have time to do that, and it's going to be hard and slows you down. You need to bring in different inputs into the process, be it the new hires, a new different type of hires. You know, if you traditionally hire people with a particular background, you know, if you're working in a trading, or actually hire IT people to come and work with you because trading is becoming very automated, etc. For example, why just hire people with trading background? I also bring in partners. Partners, I cannot again underline the need for that, because they want to work with you. They've got some technologies, they got some ideas, or they got some experiences, but they really don't know how to, you know, potentially some of them don't know how this will apply to your corporate. But working together, you'll be able to build, mesh all of this together, and you'll be able to start to see things better, and then you start to set your way into the future.
Question. The more we work with partners, one of the key questions that it often comes up, and maybe not the first question that comes up, but as we start working with them, when we discover together what the potential is, what are the roles that we take on? Where perhaps a partnership, a venture that we both see potential in, perhaps is better managed not by us, by the partner, or maybe managed by a third party that neither us or them control. So I'm wondering, in your experience, when we get to that stage where we move from it's an idea to it's a validated idea to we have a view of the business model and how this organization could actually operate, you then get to the who. You have the what, certainly you have the why, you have the how, or at least a view of it. Now we get into the who. So what have you seen in your work, particularly with corporates, about the willingness to explore, or the, you know, the possibilities for ventures in which they do not have a controlling stake, the ventures in which they allow others and recognize that maybe others are the better parent, for lack of a better word, at this point in time? I know you've seen it very much in your experience, in your work in the energy sector, for example, and other industries wouldn't be that different. So just your thoughts around that.
Yes, I would say that going into this, the last thing you want to decide is the who, because it's what best for that venture. So yeah, you shouldn't be coming with, because if you come in and you already said, I wanted this who, you've already constrained that. You've already put some shackles in it. You know, it might be small, big shackles, but you've already put shackles. So you coming into this with, there is absolutely no preset anything, because you don't know what you are, where you're going. You just know you've got the potentially the right people, the right skills, the right tools, and pull together. And very quickly, you'll be able to decide what's best for that venture. If it happens to be that, actually, I want to let this partner because of that particular individual or that particular company that have the right skill, the right experience, yeah, absolutely do that. But it's not coming with, oh yeah, that's, I want to do this, I'm going to run it, and that's it, so that the person is going to do it. It's already is going to be a constraining factor.
Thank you. Maybe just a last question from my side, and that is, in your work with, particularly with startups, with people who are truly trying to disrupt an industry, very often from the outside or partly from the outside, they may have had industry experience and then decided to go the startup route. What would be your message to them? What would be, I mean, you spoke about, you know, your message to corporates, for example. You spoke about the need to become more agile, to accelerate the development process, to not have the who conversation early enough. Those are all great points.
Yeah.
When you speak to young entrepreneurs, when you speak to startup owners who are posing some real challenges and are themselves becoming very ambitious around what can be done in an industry, what would be your most important message to them?
The most important advice I would give is to be open-minded and consider partnership. And what I mean by that, it's not about sometimes corporates tight in terms of budgets, almost defending now corporates, although now what I'm saying is you shouldn't, you know, make the budget as a constraint. But as a startup, you want to move fast and you're ambitious, is consider a lot of partnership as well, because it's not about start to charge for your product or try to make money as quick as possible, although it does help. It's about being able to explore the opportunities, because no matter what the product is, there's no product, just no one invented the final version of everything day one. And if you're providing a service or product, you absolutely cannot come and already have set ways of engaging with your partners or your corporate. And you'll be flexible to work with different companies at different paces. I think what I'm trying to say here, and I've worked with technology companies like this, you know, it's just, I want to start fast. Let's not get the whole IP procurement, how much money is going to cost, and, you know, what's the, they start working. Just let's move fast, because if you're not doing it, somebody else will come in and start to do it. You have a new product or new technology. When I was exploring with AI and data, et cetera, there's so many people coming to get products, and you want to get into the, this is the license, this, and how much is going to cost. That whole thing's up. And, you know, for me, I was like, who's the quickest for me to be in the door to start working with? So keep that message in mind. You know, how you want to get in the door, how quick you can, put anything that could slow this down aside and focus on this. It's an experimentation. It might not work, but if you do this with two or three or different companies, one of them will work, or the partner will work. So be flexible about who you partner with, and be flexible about the entry conditions for you to partner with someone.
That's great advice. Eamon, thank you for a great conversation. I really appreciate it. I know we've kind of had this conversation at the speed of light. We went through everything from bolder ambitions that CEOs and executive teams are discovering, and the leadership challenges of getting everyone to recognize the bigger opportunity, to some of the structural changes that organizations need to take place, the internal transformation. And now we're talking about people within those venture units, people within those innovation spaces. So thank you for all the great insights. It was great to have you on our podcast, and I'm sure we'll speak again soon.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, and looking forward to discussing some of this even further, you and others.
Hidden Growth Champions, the podcast. Join us next time for more business news, views, and insights from across the globe.